When I was in Los Angeles, my father, who was 91, asked me, what can you do about somebody like Frank Turple? You know, the information, he caught a few glimpses of the movie. He didn't want to see it. He was playing cards with my mother, and every once in a while he'd look up and say, are those real people? And I'd say, yeah, those are real people. And they would play cards, and he would not follow it through, and he would hear parts of the Turple story, and he would say, are you sure this isn't fiction? And I'd say, no, those are real people. So he asked me, what would you do with somebody like Frank Turple? And I said, well, the House Select Committee on Intelligence is going to begin hearings in 1982. The House Select Committee on Intelligence. They're going to investigate Edwin Wilson and Frank Turple. And the chairman is Representative Edward P. Boland. If you want to write to Representative Boland about the investigation, it is going to begin. And any information that I've sent to you through the printed sheets or through the tape cassettes, you could write letters and ask that you want a full investigation of this, of Mr. Frank Turple. If he says that they trained a Jha who attempted the murder of the Pope, you want more information about the CIA directors over them, because that tantamount to saying that the CIA wanted to shoot Ronald Reagan and wanted to shoot the Pope, which I think they did. But here's a chance for the House Select Committee on Intelligence to go into these matters, because the threads link to the assassinations through the entire past year and the assassination attempts, including the murder of Sadat. Now, there was another article this last week, probe of firms' links to Libya reported. A Detroit company is under investigation. It's called the Near East Trade and Development Company. They contacted 100 American firms this last year to sell Syria, the Middle East, and Libya weapons. Since 1979, military equipment, trucks, helicopters, ambulances, uniforms, parachutes, military tents. And this Near East Trade Company was founded 3 years ago, 1978, by George Baudin of Detroit. He's 25 years old, and he got a loan from Reverend Alfred John Baudin, a pastor of the George Syrian Orthodox Church in Detroit. Now, Edwin Wilson had 127 dummy fronts. This you can't believe that a 25-year-old out of Detroit can get a loan and approach 100 countries to arm these people and send this equipment. And who are they arming, particularly on this program? He even gave credit to training Carlos the Jackal. Well, who's Carlos? He was a fellow who was part of the Black September group, the Munich massacres in 1972, blew up the Lod airport raid also in 1972, worked with Gaddafi and the PLO, instigated the Lebanese Civil War, worked with Palestinian guerrillas. Guerrillas set up the Bader Meinhof, the Japanese Red Army, the Red Brigade in Italy, and they had bragged about killing Aldo Moro. He also was part of a group that wanted him out of the way. He was exposing the Vatican and trying to tax the Vatican in Italy for certain monies at the time he was murdered. These people have been linked, as I say, to right-wing groups and to Carlos, and he mentioned Carlos on the program. Now, getting back to Time magazine, if Frank Turple was talking about his links to a Jha who tried to kill the Pope, Time has an article, Conspiracy to Kill the Pope, and it says the Italian police and the judges in Italy were reluctant to pursue their leads to a conspiracy. Now, take Italy and transpose the United States with the John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King murders. And I want to mention Martin Luther King this evening also. The police were reluctant to pursue it. Well, why were they reluctant? Because it's going to go back right to our CIA. That's why they're all reluctant. Then the article says, incredibly, there was an announcement that photographs that the Italians had for 7 months were taken by an American named Lowell Newton, an American who photographed a man running away from the scene who had a gun in his hand. And this man was identified as Ali Shafiq. And there's a picture of him running away from the scene of the crime. And he was part of a Libyan hit team that planned to kill President Ronald Reagan and high Americans. Now, right, we know that, as I said, that Hinckley belonged to a right-wing team, but they had a picture for 7 months, and they kept it as a secret, and Newton had these pictures turned over. Newton's mystery man may be the key to the authorities' investigation, but the Italians have long had more conclusive evidence there was indeed a conspiracy to kill the Pope, and they talked about a neo-fascist nationalist action party, the NAP, that stayed with Aja, that helped him escape from Turkey, and that the right-wing organization was working, when Aja shot the Pope, that he was working with the right-wing fascist organization, and Turple referred to the Grey Wolves, which is a Nazi fascist organization. Newton's testimony about photographing this man was in the hands of the police in Rome, and then Time magazine goes on that the investigation now does not compensate for the authorities' lack of diligence in the preceding 7 months or the fact that the authorities gave the case over to one of the country's top police investigators who put it over on the shelf and didn't want to investigate it. They called it the dawdling approach of the Italian authorities, that even though it's astonishing, the fact is that they have now admitted there were accomplices. Well, the same thing happened in the United States. If the photographs had been given more dissemination by the news media and that were out on John Kennedy's murder, or in the Ambassador Hotel where Robert Kennedy was murdered, or Memphis, Tennessee when Martin Luther King was killed, all the photographs that were available were in the hands of the Justice Department, and they sat on them for how many years? From 1963 and 1968. It's a terrible tragedy that the photographic evidence has been available to the authorities, and that is one of the things that the researchers, like myself, have tried to do for so many years, is to keep telling the American people that the evidence is there of the conspiracy and that the authorities sit on it, just as they are doing in Italy at this time, even though they've had the photograph of this particular man. People magazine had a section summing up the year called The Assassins. A Pope and two presidents fall victim to those who would write history with a gun. Remember the program I did on KLRB on how one bullet changes the course of history. And in this article, of course, is a picture of John Hinckley and Aja, who shot at the Pope, and Mubarak and the killing of Sadat, the two attempts, and then the one that worked, and Sadat was murdered this last summer. This is the anniversary, getting off of the Frank Turple story for a little bit, and we'll get back to it, of course, almost every week, because it's a fascinating story, and because the House Intelligence Committee is going to have hearings, I'll keep you updated on those hearings. But this is the first anniversary since the hostages are out from Iran, and I thought I would just give you a little update on one of them. We can't keep track of all 52, maybe one a week. There's one fellow, Johnny McKeel, M-C-K-E-E-L, McKeel. Johnny McKeel was a guard at the embassy in Iran. He was one of the people who was so carefully guarding our embassy. He got out of Iran, as everyone, the others did at the inauguration day or right after Ronald Reagan took oath of office. And he was in Texas for 3 months, and he was sort of an off-duty policeman. He couldn't get his system of Iran out of his body, I guess. He had to be still working. He was an off-duty policeman, and he worked for the Balchi Springs Police Department. That's a little town southeast of Dallas. And he walked into a home where family were. They suspected they had some contraband, and they knocked down the door and broke the husband's toes and made the mother stand naked, and they terrorized them. And this particular hostage that's home now, he was on the police force just fooling around with them for 3 months when he got out. He went around with this police department, and the legal source told the UPI, you've got to understand the Balchi Springs police are known for their Gestapo tactics. It's an incredible story, but you know they're known as part of the Gestapo tactics. Well, McKeel has gone down to El Toro Marine Base in Santa Ana, and he's going into aircraft training and be an officer in the Marines. He's been arrested in this particular case, but if he gets off, and maybe he'll just be fine. Originally, he was guarding the American embassy. It was taken over November 4th, 1979. He was a military policeman there, so he came back and used what he knew about the SAVAK and the Gestapo tactics. He couldn't rest for 3 months. Now he's, as I say, training to become a Marine officer down at the Marine base. I think it'd be a good idea to take him out of the Marines right now before he continues in the service terrorizing other people. I think that's enough terror from one person, and the trauma that he has over there, he may transfer to other people, and I think that somebody like that should be taken out of the Marines. I have another announcement to change the subject. The love affair of the century seems to be over, and I don't mean Natalie Wood. That former, they call him a former Nazi, you know, the fellow Otto von Bolschwing that I've talked about, who set up Adolf Eichmann's extermination program, who worked in Palestine in 1936 and in the Netherlands, taking money and property from the Jews and putting them in Swiss banks. And as soon as he was fingered by the news media, von Bolschwing's lawyer said he was old and sick, and he can't defend himself, so he's not going to be deported. There were news stories that he's not going to leave the country. He's to give up his U.S. citizenship, but he's not going to be sent out of the country. No way to deport him because he worked for the CIA. Last month, Mrs. von Bolschwing said she's going to divorce her husband. She's 73, and that poor old dog with those tubes in his nose, he's 72. So that love affair is over. He won't be deported, but he's losing his citizenship. So she's going to divorce Adolf, and Mrs. von Bolschwing announced she's filed for divorce. They met living in a senior citizen's apartment. They've been married 20 years, but she's dumping Adolf and leaving him in the hospital, I guess, because no more fun and games now that he's been identified by the news media and he can't go anywhere without that tube in his nose. She's decided to divorce him, and so that affair is over, 72 and 73. There's an article in the Parade magazine, and many of you might have seen it in the magazine sections of your newspaper, on Anwar Sadat and the eulogy given to him by Henry Kissinger and his background that I've mentioned on this program many times. And somebody wrote to Parade, please tell us about Anwar Sadat of Egypt. Wasn't he a terrorist, an opportunist, a revolutionary fanatic, a Hitler supporter, and a Nazi spy during World War II? How could Henry Kissinger describe him in Time magazine as a miracle of creation and a very great man? And the answer is Henry Kissinger is very sincere. He knew Sadat well. When he gave the eulogy, Sadat was an avid Hitler supporter who collaborated with Nazi spies in Cairo. He wrote about in his autobiography, Revolt on the Nile, how he was a potential terrorist. He wanted to blow up the British embassy, and his role with Abdel Nasser, who became the head of Egypt, and then he took over after him. The article describes him as an opportunist. He was a Nazi, and I know that Sadat made all members of his army own and read Mein Kampf, and Henry Kissinger was very close to him. I've often questioned Henry Kissinger's religion and his role, and over and over again in Chile or here or in South America, Saudi Arabia, wherever, Henry Kissinger is kissing cousin to their admitted Nazis, outrageous Nazis. And I've long believed that only in the title is Henry Kissinger a Nazi. I think he has betrayed a lot of people and taken on that role to perpetuate the Cold War, the anti-Russian position, and instigate a lot of problems for Eastern Europe. And speaking of Eastern Europe, last week I was talking about the Polish situation and the solidarity, or several weeks ago I was talking about the solidarity, how the AFL-CIO, the CIA, formed solidarity and perpetuated the anarchy in Poland that led nowhere while the Western banks were left with a lot of debts. There was an article in Business Week this last week, January 18th, a review. It's not an article. It's a review of a book by a well-known author. Anthony Sampson wrote a book called The Arms Bazaar about American weapons for sale. And he wrote one on the oil company set up by John J. McCloy, who was on the Warren Commission and High Commissioner for Germany and a heavy role in putting the Japanese into concentration camps. He's written some critical books on oil and weapons, and now he has a book on money lenders by Viking Press. And Business Week has a review of that book, and this author is a good author, Anthony Sampson, and has a handle on some of the problems going on. And many times on this program, I've discussed the problem of missing millions and the economic system that could collapse as much money is put into non-productive espionage or traveling money for agents that's invested. And when a bank folds like the Nugent Bank in Australia with $55 million, to $1 billion, and it collapses, that money, which is CIA and narcotic money, is put in another bank. And then when the Wells Fargo Bank, if there's $200 or $300 million, that money quickly supplied from another bank, so it doesn't look like it's failing, or $55 million missing out of Berlin. And I've been tracing for several years the missing millions and billions. And in this book, pertinent to the missing millions program, he tells how banks are on the brink of collapsing because deposits are taken from oil-rich nations and loaned to third-world countries that can't pay them back, and they get deeper into debt, and the money is going to megalomaniac tyrants. And he gives examples such as Indonesia and Zaire, but Poland is the one that interests me because he says if Poland can't pay back the international financial system, who withstands the shock? If we pour money into these countries like Poland, and in this particular book, he refers to the fact that countries like Poland use the loan up to $26 billion, and he has one figure of $16 billion, for consumption rather than growth. And the book brings up the question that if you use it for consumption and you're not producing anything that you can trade or use, and if they can't pay back the loan, what happens to the banks that are left? Now, as I mentioned before, the money went into Poland, and I believe it went into solidarity, into printing, to paying the strikers, to support the unrest, and into the Catholic Church there, to force a response by the Soviet Union. Then that would be the excuse for Alexander Haig and Brzezinski and the multinationals to step in and have a war, which in return would save the U.S. economy. In other words, $26 billion can be sent to Poland for consumption, not asking for growth. The consumption is unrest and chaos. The Russians have to respond and protect their border and their interests there, which pulls us in, and only war can get us out of the doldrums. We plan on war. This is a warfare state that will end the depression and the unemployment. This book says that the banks lent Poland $16 million so they could finance an ambitious investment program. But as it turned out, much of the money for domestic and political reasons was siphoned into consumption. Now, if the banks let Poland the $16 million to finance what they call an ambitious investment program, you'd think after the first million or second million, they'd want to know where it was going. But as I said before, they had no accounting for the money, and I don't believe they thought they would have an ambitious program going. I read another article that Poland is it was in the Los Angeles Times today, Poland is a country run by a bunch of, they use the word mafia, thieves, and people with no expertise to run the country. And the problem was that you're pouring money into these people and you're not getting anything out of it. This book goes into the financial crisis of banks, but it mentions Poland, and Poland is an example of putting money into a system of chaos, just as the FBI and CIA in 1968 began Operation Chaos in the United States and paid agents to create chaos. Well, what do you get out of chaos? If you have an intelligence budget of $22 billion and you're creating chaos and not putting into production, how in the world can you support a system very long that will hold up? And it's that kind of thinking that has poured money into Lech Walesa over in Poland and caused the money not to be used to start industries that will support the Polish people, but just to make them miserable and blame the Soviet system on the misery. And so that is what's happened. And it's interesting, this book on the collapse of banks and the money system and the problem with the abuse of money goes into Poland. Playboy, I got a lot of magazines at the airport because we don't have many magazine stands up here in Carmel, and I was buying them like mad if you have 24 hours to spend. Playboy this month has an interview with Lech Walesa of Poland at February Playboy, And they asked him a question. They said, "You're an interesting breed of political leader. You are the head of a democratic process, which is new for Poland, but some of your tactics are like a dictator, Mr. Lech Walesa." This is Time magazine, the great cover man of the year. "Do you consider yourself something of a benign dictator?" He says, "No, I'm a democratic dictator." "What does that mean?" He says, "Well, I know that I ascertain our goals in a democratic way. We agree on a framework together, but the realization of this framework, of these goals, is my business. I handle them in a dictatorial way." Can you get that double talk? He says, "I ascertain the goals in a democratic way, but I handle them in a dictatorial way." And Playboy interviewer said, "Do you establish any restraints for yourself as this dictator? Do you just bludgeon in your way?" He said, "No, I do not wage war." That's at least not yet. He doesn't wage war. He said, "I do conduct some great battle for the time being. For the time being, I do not shoot to get things done. I select my advisors. I rely on them. I use tricks, devices, in order to accomplish the tasks that I am given." Lech Walesa is given by the CIA to use tricks, devices, and so forth. He said, "For the time being, I do not shoot to get things done." What brought Lech Walesa to a standstill and was the plan to have an immediate coup in Poland and overturn the communists. And the communists went into those 400 offices I mentioned on this program and obtained death lists of people who were to be killed, the communists that were to be killed by Lech Walesa and Solidarity. And because the Soviet Union has that list, and because the Polish authorities have that list, they clamped down quickly on Solidarity. But this is a guy full of BS. You can read the interview if you want. It's interesting. He is a dictator. He hasn't started killing yet. But the fact is, and the facts remain, that they were planning mass murders and killings, and that's Lech Walesa. I got a letter from a subscriber to these tapes. He sent me a picture of Ronald Reagan hugging the wife of the Polish ambassador to the U.S., Mr. Spasowski, and Ronald Reagan is in embrace, and she has her head on his shoulder, and this friend wrote above it, "Does Reagan have a double?" No, he doesn't have a double, but he gets an absolute ecstasy if he can hug the wife of a Polish ambassador. That he gets so tender that he looks like he practically has an orgasm. So if you think that's not Reagan, it is. It's just the thrill that he's never held the wife of a Polish ambassador. Tell him to put his arms around one of the Haitian refugees or the people from El Salvador and Guatemala and Honduras, and then you'll see the real Reagan. This one, he's just really crying under the umbrella. It's been the most tender thing since his administration, I suppose. I received another article from a subscriber, Aid to Poland. The Christian Relief Agency, World Vision, is sending $300,000 emergency relief project to Poland. World Vision is sending infant formula, baby food, dry skim milk over to Poland, and Mr. Goddard, the director of the operations, is supplying, World Vision is supplying the religious government and religious officials with assistance. There was a program around Christmas about World Vision, and a man that worked for World Vision objected to seeing these old movies over and over again of them feeding the people in Somalia, and he said the crisis was over and they're still there feeding them. And he was asked, "Well, why do you suppose they keep showing this?" And he said, "Well, their version of starvation is that they won't be happy till everyone in the world is Christian. The food problem is over, but turning them into Christians is something else." So World Vision is in many, many countries. And, of course, John Hinckley Jr.'s father, the fellow that took the shot at Ronald Reagan and blew out Mr. Brady's brains and shot two other people who were seriously injured in Washington last March, his father is very active in World Vision and has been identified as a CIA group that worked in Cambodia and Guatemala and Nigeria with the CIA, and they're very instrumental in carrying on this Christian program and informing for the government for those who would be, I suppose, anti-Christ or labor organizers, and turning these people's names in. That's what they were doing with the people from El Salvador that fled to Guatemala. They were turning over the names to the government of these people. I don't have much time. Maybe I'll do more next week. It's the anniversary of Reverend Martin Luther King's birthday. There were celebrations all over the country. I really believe that the best thing we can do to honor Martin Luther King and John Kennedy or Robert Kennedy is not to have a day out of school or let the judges off for a day. That doesn't accomplish anything. I think what they should do is make it mandatory that everyone in the entire school stay in school and spend one day in the classes having a movie on Martin Luther King, reading his speeches, English teachers reading what he said, reading government documents from the COINTEL program. We might have a Martin Luther King Day where they read an article from the Los Angeles Times. This was February 1980. The CIA reviewed they saw Martin Luther King as a communist and a danger to the United States. And in 1965, the CIA said the King should be removed as a black leader. The informant said that Martin Luther King was a threat in the United States. Somewhere in the Negro movement at the top, this is your federal government, there must be a Negro leader who is clean, who could step into the vacuum and chaos if Martin Luther King were exposed or assassinated. Well, they certainly did get their Negro leaders. They got Andrew Young, who's on the Trilateral Commission. They got Jesse Jackson, who was on the balcony. They got even Reverend Ralph Abernathy, who was with Martin Luther King. And they got the hypocrites of the world, the black people that were right with him who wouldn't expose his murder. The black leaders today, two of them, of the main black leaders, were on the balcony when King was murdered, and they have said nothing about exposing the person who shot Martin Luther King or tried to show where James Earl Ray was when Martin Luther King was shot. There are 373 files of government documents on Operation Chaos, how the CIA surveyed him, how they were in Memphis before he was shot in April 1968, how they wrote articles and memos that King had to be neutralized, that the government would interfere, how there was eavesdropping in his hotel room, how he'd been wiretapped set from 1963 to 1968, and the CIA had many derogatory things about him, that he was a threat to the United States, that we needed a new black leader. And they said in 1965, if any black leaders were shown to be engaged in illegal activities, it would cause a split between Johnson and the black leaders. The CIA didn't want Martin Luther King. He was eloquent. He was young. He was energetic. He was fearless. He had qualities that were worth remembering. A person who wrote a book on Martin Luther King called The Fear of God, and the FBI tells about the Martin Luther King attachment, how the FBI followed him. And just this year, a professor at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill was visited by the FBI, and they offered this particular author $250,000 not to put out this book on Martin Luther King and not to review it. There was a review by David Garrow on a book by Chuck Fager that came out in 1981 called The Fear of God and the FBI. And the FBI went to the reviewer and offered him $250,000. And when he refused it, they said that under the new law, they warned him that to disclose the FBI agents who were involved with Martin Luther King's murder would constitute a felony under the new Intelligence Identity Protection Act that Ronald Reagan is just putting in, that to identify agents' names because of this bill, which is not yet into law but will be, we can't mention the FBI people who shot Martin Luther King or who worked with him. So the years go on. The laws are covering up the deed. The best we can do to remember Martin Luther King is to keep exposing the people who murdered him and the people who covered it up. Whether they're white or black, they should be named, where they were and why they covered it. That's the best memory. Put everybody back in school and teach the people his name and his speeches. A judge said in San Francisco this week, it was in the weekend paper, that juries don't have to have knowledge of particular events. They're not knowledgeable. 50% didn't even know who Adolf Hitler was. Well, if they don't know that, they certainly don't know the speeches of Martin Luther King, and I know they don't. So in memory of this man, his birthday, the anniversary of his birthday, the living memory is the pursuit of how he was killed so these things don't happen again. And if you don't go into that, they keep happening again. I'm over in time by 1/2 minute now. It's Mae Brussel. I'll be back with you next week on this program, and you take care.
This has been World Watchers International with noted conspiracy investigator Mae Brussel. This program originates from Carmel, California.
Tanakwe, Haremai.